This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're tuned in to the Evening Edition, and I'm Ezra Zayed, and this evening we'll be speaking about educating education. Now, education is a mind-boggling entity that's not without its problems. The lack of teachers, subpar syllabus in schools, and bridging the gap between the poor and privileged are just some of the tricky situations parents, students, and education ministries find themselves in. This evening, we're speaking with someone who understands this firsthand. Matthew Haney is the Vice President of the Board of Education in the San Francisco Unified School District, and he's part of the delegate that makes up the American Council of Young Political Leaders, who were here for a visit. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Now, Matt, you're part of the American Council of Young Political Leaders. Tell us what this is for you and what it feels like to be in Southeast Asia and what lessons are you hoping to learn, or are you just here to eat the food?
It feels like I'm here to eat the food. I love every meeting we go to, every person we meet. They say, "Have you eaten lunch yet?"
Yeah, that's how
is how you introduce. Yeah, yeah. And it's only 9 a.m. and they're saying, "Have you eaten lunch yet?" So not yet. And our breakfast at our hotel, I was telling people that you can get whatever your favorite food is from any meal of the day. Mm-hmm. They're serving it for breakfast, so it's a lot of eating. It's been fantastic. You know, I think that this is a very interesting, exciting time for Malaysia. We were a few days in Indonesia. I think also a very interesting, exciting time in Indonesia as well. There's a lot of changes that are happening in both countries, a lot of ways in which young people are stepping up and taking leadership in this country. And so to be able to be here and to learn about what's happening and also the type of relationship that we want to have together as peers, our generation of leaders in the United States and in Malaysia, we're excited to have those conversations. And I think there's a lot of hope about the future.
Well, that's an interesting point right there about the American Council of Young Political Leaders. I assume that a few decades ago, when this organization would go on trips far and wide, that connectivity just perhaps wasn't there in the same way that it is now. And so when you meet people, you can really sort of have a relationship, a meaningful relationship, and I guess have that dialogue and hope for it to grow.
Yeah, we're all friends on Facebook now.
Yeah, of course.
Anybody who's listening can find me on Facebook, Matt Haney, and hopefully we can learn from each other moving forward. Through social media, it's easy to stay connected, to share what we're doing, to learn more about what you all are doing. And to have this be a longer-term relationship. It doesn't have to be just a five-day thing, or it can be something that's the beginning of a longer-term relationship. So I think it is very different to come here now and to be able to know that we can stay connected as opposed to just have to eat as much and learn as much in a short period of time. And now I can find my local Malaysian restaurant in San Francisco and maybe know what to order a little more.
Matt, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're somebody who's been involved quite heavily in education. What drew you to this particular topic, this particular issue in the first place?
I think education is, unlike anything else in terms of the potential for change, potential for impact on society. When we are able to educate more of our population, we can give them opportunities that they don't currently have. We can change what is possible for individuals who may be left out of society in different types of ways. And our schools now are also not just about algebra. They're also about whether people are having enough food, or whether they have access to healthcare, or whether they're going to get jobs, or whether we're keeping them out of the criminal justice system. So all of the things within society, I think, are touched by our schools. And if you care about what's happening in your community, you need to care about what's happening in our schools. And so that's what first got me involved. I'm a product of our public schools locally. And so the idea that I could create schools or help to be a part of developing an education system that served more students, and especially students who were not being well served by our schools, was something that was an opportunity I wanted to take.
Well, we're going to get into your role a little bit more after this, but just talking about, I know this is going to be a loaded question, but just on the state of education in the United States, and I can tell you that at least from the experience of Malaysia, everything's centralized. When it comes to the syllabus, comes to what you study and how you study, the language of instruction, and we've been sort of brought up that way. But one of the key differences, at least in the United States, is that, you know, it's a competitive environment. Mm. You can go to the best school for that particular subject in Boston. You can go to best school for that particular topic in San Francisco or LA. And has that system served you well? And where do you think are the areas in which are pressing in terms of improvement?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we probably have a lot more in common than maybe people would think. We have schools, for the most part, our kindergarten through 12th grade system still looks a whole lot like it did 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Mm. You could have somebody, you know, who was around in the 1800s magically come back to life, Abraham Lincoln, say, and come back into society, and everything would look different. This radio station would look different. Certainly transportation would look different. The idea of the internet would be, you know, something mind-blowing. But the schools would look very similar. You have one teacher in front of a classroom. You have big textbooks. You have desks. You know, all of that has stayed pretty stagnant, pretty static. And so I think we're in a process in the United States as well as around the world of rethinking what this looks like in the knowledge age and the information age. You don't need a textbook when you have Google in the same way that you used to. You don't need to have schools in the same way that we imagine them as brick and mortar. What people can learn about Malaysia, for example, from a classroom in San Francisco, and they can Skype with people here. They can listen to this program. There's a whole lot of ways that in which what it means to learn and what it means to communicate has changed. And so we're in that process in the United States as well of rethinking what that looks like. And I would hope that in San Francisco, especially the home of Twitter and Uber and Airbnb and all of these different companies that are really driving what shaping the world through information technology, that we would be on the forefront of also transforming what education looks like, because it needs to look differently for these young folks if they're going to survive and thrive in that world, and also advance us to the next level of what this is going to look like in 10 years, 20 years from now.
All right. Now, of course, in wanting to make that change, I'll be asking Matt to talk to us about the San Francisco Board of Education's Unified School District System, of which he's vice president of. All that after the break. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the evening edition. I'm Ezra Zayed, and we're speaking to Matthew Haney, the vice president of the Board of Education in the San Francisco Unified School District. And we seem to think that our education system here is plagued by incessant common problems, but we're slowly learning that these issues we have are more commonplace. These are real problems in schools happening on a global scale. Now, Matt, I'm always sort of fascinated with the American education system in that on one end, you have, you know, these amazing universities and colleges, you know, one of the best in the world. But on the same spectrum, you have very, very, you know, difficult public schools where kids are not learning, where teachers are not getting paid enough. How does that system coexist within itself? And I'm just trying to sort of make sense as to how it sort of correlates. Is there a gridlock somewhere that I'm not seeing, or is there a problem in which has not been addressed for too long?
I think that's the crisis that we face in our educational system, and it's probably similar in Malaysia. It works really well for some people, and it doesn't work at all for other people. And some people might say that it was designed to do that. That was on purpose. So we want to take a system that has structurally left a lot of people out by, as you said, putting them in some cases in schools where their teachers are underpaid, where their classrooms are crowded, where, you know, they don't have enough desks for all the students. You know, we still have those realities. So we want to transform a system that has had those structural inequalities into one that actually is helping to overcome those inequalities and undermine those types of inequalities. So I think that's the challenge that we face. The United States education system has been slipping in international rankings. And a lot of that is as a result of the level of poverty that we have among children. If you actually control for poverty among industrialized countries, United States' education system is quite good. So it doesn't work so well for children who are living in poverty, and we have, unfortunately, too many, and it works well for others. So that's part of what we're trying to transform, is that how do you make the education system the great equalizer that we know that it can and should be, free, widely available, high quality, especially for those who need it most.
Explain to us about the San Francisco Unified School District. You're the vice president of that. How does this work? Is this a body that holds together a conglomerate of public schools
yeah,
together? Yeah, how does it work?
It's a very unique system, I think, internationally. I know in Malaysia it's a federal system, so all of the schools are sort of, the public schools at least, are run by the federal government. For us, we have local control of our public school system. So in San Francisco, we have about 140 public schools from preschool all the way through high school.
We're talking about how many kids
and
thereabouts.
This is about 60,000
right.
children. And we elect locally a governing body for that entire school system that sets the wages and benefits for the teachers, that recruits the teachers, that decides how many schools we're going to have, that decides on the curriculum, the policies, and we elect that body locally just among San Francisco voters. And so we have seven members of that board for our unified school district. We call it unified school district because it has every level of schooling from preschool, elementary school, middle school, and high school. And we serve as the governing body. We set the budget. We hire what's called our superintendent, who serves as kind of the CEO of the school district. And in terms of our relationship to the federal government, it's relatively limited. Most of our funding comes from the state government, from the state of California, and then we decide how to distribute those funds and set policies and set curriculum based on the overall standards and structure that the state has developed for us.
So tell me, what are the benefits of this system? I mean, it sounds certainly like local communities are taking control of their own situation and they want to set the terms in which their children are entering schools and what they're learning in schools.
So many people say there's both benefits and drawbacks to this system. a benefit of this is that a local community can make sure that their public schools reflect their values and their unique needs and perspectives. So if you want certain, for example, in San Francisco, where we have a lot of opportunities in technology, our community might want us to create more schools that focused on technological skills. That's a positive example of it. And if they want to bring about change in their schools, if they have a problem, for example, if you feel that a principal is not listening to you or is not meeting the needs of your children, you can go to your elected official who can help to hold that system accountable for you as a community member. So it gives you kind of a direct access, democratic control of the schools in a way that takes it out of the hands of just purely the bureaucracy. So you actually have someone say, okay, well, if you don't help me with this, I'm gonna make sure you don't get elected next time.
Right.
Now, a drawback of it, I think, is that we've got thousands of these school districts just in California, some of them small, some of them big. And so then you have different standards, different quality, some level of confusion and disparities between the systems, and maybe too much government or too much democracy, where you have people who can get elected and maybe not always do things that are positive or not always come with the type of skills where they can actually run a school system.
So are you looking over your shoulder at other school districts and saying, well, they might be doing that bit right? And is that something that you want to bring? So, I mean, I guess the idea is, or the ideal
right.
vision of this is that when you're looking at all these different school districts, each of them become competitive.
Exactly.
And they each try to better themselves. But you're right. There is sometimes, folks just want to send their kids to school and just hope something happens there. Does it ask for more engagement from parents? Does it ask for more engagement from local communities to take ownership and not have a passive experience in this entire project?
Yeah, I think it is. It's a different idea of what schools are. If you control them democratically as a community, you have some responsibility to make sure that they work. And if you have a community that is marginalized or is not activated politically, sometimes that translates into not as strong institutions or is not as strong schools in this case. So I think it does have some challenges. We're constantly looking at what other school districts are doing. Hopefully they're looking at what we're doing too.
Yeah.
And that we can, yes, compete with each other, but also learn from each other. And each school district in its own way is a mini laboratory so that you bring some things work, some things don't work. But through that, hopefully the opportunity to share across school districts leads to an improvement for all districts in moving in the right directions of copying the good things that each of the districts are doing.
After the news, I'll continue the conversation with Matt and ask him if he thinks the U.S. government can play a greater role in improving overall education standards. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to The Evening Edition, and I'm Ezra Zayed, and we've been speaking about educating education with our guest Matthew Haney. He's the Vice President of the Board of Education in the San Francisco Unified School District, and he also happens to be part of the delegate that makes up the American Council of Young Political Leaders. And Matt had explained earlier about how the system of unifying school districts in the U.S. was done essentially to reach out to more students as a way to ensure equal education opportunity. Now, Matt, is this a system that's in place throughout the country, and has it always been in place?
Yeah, it has always been this way. As I said, there are thousands of them around the country. There are some people who feel like we shouldn't run our system that way.
What are the alternatives?
So I think that you could imagine a much greater role for the federal government of setting standards, of ensuring quality. You could also run it through a more bureaucratic system where you didn't actually elect people. You know, as a school board member who's responsible for running a school system, the only qualification that I need to have is to win an election.
Yeah.
You don't actually need to be an educator. And I think many people in many countries would find that kind of strange. You know,
yeah.
Do you want somebody running your transportation system who doesn't know anything about transportation? So it's a very democratic idea of what our public school system should be, and it has been the way that we've run it for as long as we've had public schools. And I obviously support it. I've seen it work well in our school district in San Francisco. We have a very active and informed political community. It's a very competitive election to get onto the school board in San Francisco, and it's a very high-profile position. In other places, it's whoever says not it. You know, I mean, who doesn't say not it? They end up on the school board because nobody wants to spend so many of their hours as a volunteer.
And Matt, I've got it in my notes that you sort of you lean towards being a Democrat, and with that, do you feel that the federal government has a bigger role to play when it comes to education?
I definitely lean Democrat. Actually, in San Francisco, we only have elected Democrats. Mm. There are no elected Republicans in San Francisco, so it's a very different situation. So it doesn't mean we don't disagree. We have a lot of disagreements in different factions, as you can imagine. I think that the federal government should give us more money. I think that they can do more to protect vulnerable populations, marginal populations in our schools. Traditionally, the role of the federal government has been to make sure that there's at least a minimum standard and that school districts do not violate the civil rights of certain populations in schools. That's been their role historically. If there's a situation where students who have a certain race or students who have special needs are not being served well in the school system, that's the role of the federal government. I think that that's an important role for them to play. I would like them to do more to help us with that.
And therefore, I imagine that the expectations from the federal government would be that the minimum requirement then gets raised in terms of what the expectations are.
Yeah, I support that. You know, an example of this, one of the biggest federal programs is the federal government pays for free school lunch. So if you're of a certain income level, you get free school lunches. And it's the biggest program that the federal government runs when it comes to education. I fully support that program. Our problem is that, say, to provide a lunch in San Francisco for a student, it costs $3.50 or so per lunch to have a good quality lunch. Vegetable is healthy. The federal government gives about $2. So they're not giving us enough money to actually deliver on those standards as it is. So that's a kind of example of where they can play a greater role even in areas in which they've already stepped in.
I wanted to touch on a couple of policies and initiatives that you've introduced as Vice President of the San Francisco Unified School District. And these areas include school discipline, curriculum, technological innovation. Tell us a little bit more about that.
For sure. So I don't know if Malaysia has the similar issue around school discipline. So we have a concept, I'm sure it's similar, called school suspensions and expulsions.
Yep.
So
We're still figuring out corporal punishment as well.
So, corporal punishment. Okay. Yeah. Some places in the United States have that. We don't have that. So what we have is a situation where a lot of the students who most need to be in the classroom because they're behind in school, because they need extra help, maybe they're having challenges at home, they're experiencing some trauma in their lives. Those are the students who we're kicking out of the classroom.
That's right.
And we're kicking out of the school. And many of the students, they feel that when you send them home, it's like a vacation, or they're home playing video games, or it's also a message that you send to a child who is maybe having some challenges, and they don't know how to deal with that. So they have problems at home, and they come to school, and they have their head down, and then that student is sent away. That's the wrong message that we want to send to children. So we have spent, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about how we can make schools places that are more welcoming and more inclusive and value and affirm students so that they want to be there and that they are there, and that we're not sending them away, and that if they are doing something that we don't like, that we have ways to actually address that in a positive, evidence-based way, as opposed to an exclusionary, punitive way.
And have you figured it out yet?
I think that we've made a lot of progress. So we've cut our school suspensions by 70% over the last few years. But what's even better than that is that schools are about relationships. They're a community. In order to have a student who maybe we want to reach that we haven't reached especially well, we need to make them have stronger, we need to help them build stronger relationships and greater trust in the people at the school. And so we have different ways that we can do that. And generally, punishment is not often the best way to do that. We've found. And so
traditionally, it's acted as a deterrent to other students. And in terms of the efficacy of how it impacts the student in question, not great.
Right. Not great. And it may be a bit of a myth that it actually helps the other students as well. If you go to school and you're in fear, that's not the right, that's not the type of feeling that we want to bring out among all of our students. So we want to have schools be places where people can feel safe, where they feel valued, where they can explore and be imaginative. So we've had a lot of success with this. I think that it's catching on. And the other thing that we've had is it's certain students, it's often boys, it's often boys of certain races, mm-hmm. African-American, Latino students who are being sent out at much, much higher rates. So there's some element of discrimination that's also taking place within our schools that we want to address. But it also helps everybody, and we've had a lot of positive success with it. So that's been a big priority. I mentioned the technology before.
Yeah.
Learning how to code is basically a required second language in San Francisco.
Yeah,
now.
I imagine so.
And we have a lot of growth of our technology sector. Many of the companies that your audience will be using right now as mm-hmm. we're talking are based in San Francisco. But most of the people who work at those places are not from San Francisco. They come from other places and they're educated, maybe Stanford or Berkeley. And then they go and they work there, but they're not from San Francisco. Those opportunities are not often available to the children who grow up in our city. They're left out. They're shut out. And many of them would never even have been to these companies. There are young people who grew up in the shadow of Twitter, of the building of Twitter, that would never have been in that building and wouldn't even know that it was there. And so we're trying to change that by actually creating a situation where the opportunities that are being created in our city are available to all of the young people who live there.
Now, the final thing I wanted to touch on, and it's probably...
Donald Trump, right?
Well, we've got plenty of time on him. But, when it comes to this issue of education, and, one of the biggest problems that we're having in this country are the role of teachers or the talent pool of teachers that we're selecting to teach our kids to become the best brains and the best talents of the world. And it seems that they're a dying breed, and we're actually spending a lot of money in re-educating teachers so that, they are adopting new strategies and approaches mm-hmm. that are more contemporary, that are more effective. What has been your experience with identifying good teachers and encouraging the ones who have the potential mm-hmm. to stay on?
Mm-hmm. But teaching is probably the hardest and the most important job in the world. They have our future in their hands literally every day. And yet in our country, we have underpaid them, we've undervalued them, we've undersupported them, we've undertrained them. You can become a teacher, you know, with an online certificate, never even having been in the classroom. And then you have a room of 30 young, bright, impressionable minds at your disposal. That's a scary, scary thing if you actually think about it. So I think it's less complicated than we make it out to be in some ways. We have to elevate the prestige of this profession by actually providing more educational preparation for teachers and investing in it, so you don't have to go way in debt and to become a teacher. And then you have to give teachers not just the pay and the benefits and all of that, but you actually have to make their work conditions possible to commit to over the long term. If at the end of one day you're burnt out and you don't want to come out the next day, how are you going to stay there for 10 years? How are you going to stay there for 20 years? You need to actually make it a profession that people can commit to over the long term by giving them the autonomy, the freedom, the respect that the any of us who are in professions expect. And if we do that, whether it's in Malaysia or the United States, I think that's how we address some of the challenges we have with teaching.
Well, Matt, we've been going on about this topic for quite some time. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and we could go on for another hour.
Well,
I
got to go eat. So yeah. It's been about 20 minutes. And I haven't eaten yet. So,
yeah. Well, Matt, thank you very much for joining us in the studio, and best of luck for all your future endeavors.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's great to be with you.
Folks, we've been speaking to Matt Haney, Vice President of the San Francisco Unified School District. And if you missed any part of this program, download the podcast at www.bfm.my. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.